All right, well, we're getting started with get started off right here on Saturday night on The Circle. Ethan Hatcher, your host, producer Jack on the board, and this is the first broadcast of 2024. I'm very excited, but obviously we're still ironing out the bumps, and that's okay. That's okay. We'll get it figured out. So we've recently had, over the last few months, kind of a producer shuffle. Producer Carl had left for greener pastures. And then we had producer Gary for a couple of weeks, but he went out for a pack of cigarettes and never came back. Am I correct in assuming, producer Jack, that you are the new permanent producer for Saturday night on The Circle? Is that correct in my assumption?
Yes, that's correct.
Awesome.
And yeah, I haven't gotten trained on the show exactly, but we have worked together before, so I'm pretty confident.
We'll figure it out, man.
Yeah.
You've done a great job on other shows. I have nothing but the utmost confidence in your ability to execute this highly rated Saturday night show.
I
just had to confirm that it was going to be you to be the permanent producer, because they tell me nothing around here.
Yeah.
They really do. I'm the low man on the totem pole.
Yeah.
So I'm kept completely out of the loop. Well, glad to welcome you to the show. Welcome to this highly rated program, and I look forward to working with you week after week.
Thank you. I look forward to it, too.
Let's get started with the stories for this evening. After all, we have to commemorate this inaugural 2024 broadcast with a reflection on the outgoing Governor Eric Holcomb. He gave his final State of the State address, and wouldn't you know it, he hit quite a self-congratulatory note. But was it deserved?
Nearly every step forward we've made during these last 7 years has followed the Indiana model. A remarkable team effort. So please give yourselves and our statewide partners a big round of applause on a job well done.
Establishment, establishment, you always know what's best.
You suck! Learn the rules!
I had to cut down the self-adulation. They gave themselves more than a minute standing ovation. But what is there to celebrate? The infrastructure of the capital city is crumbling. We have a rising crime rate. Property taxes are forcing Hoosiers out of their homes. The legislature passed the highest gas tax increase in Indiana state history, and all of that under Governor Eric Holcomb's tenure. The fact that he was trying to say Indiana is a leader nationwide in infrastructure is really thumbing his nose, particularly at Hoosiers living in the capital city, because it's falling apart. Yeah, US 40 might be fine. Driving along I-70 is pleasant enough. But if you get off the highway and start hitting Michigan Street or New York Street or 10th Street or some of the alleyways right over on my side of town, you got a 15-foot pothole that's been festering for years, and Eric Holcomb's going to act like everything is okay?
We're now known for advanced manufacturing, for being a top 10 ag state, a leader in plant, animal, and life sciences, a top convention destination, a logistics and freight hub, a top state in the nation for infrastructure.
Liar! Liar! Liar!
Get back, witch!
I mean, it's just not a good look for the governor to be saying we're leading the nation when he's allowing the capital city to fall apart. Like, is he just not driving around the state house very much? Maybe that's part of the cushy gig. They outfit the governor's vehicle with extra strong suspension. I don't know what's going on. So that way he doesn't notice the potholes on his journey here. Or maybe he's just lying to you, and that's the simpler truth. Of course, he was also making grand gestures about the AAA credit rating that Indiana has maintained thanks to its surplus, but he mentioned nothing about the disastrous shortfalls in Medicaid thanks to his expansion of government-run healthcare.
Our population is growing faster than every state we border. We paid down $4.5 billion in debt, returned $1.5 billion to taxpayers, all while maintaining prudent reserves to keep our AAA state credit rating.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
thank goodness we had the prudent reserves that were largely grown by predecessors in the executive office than Governor Holcomb, because if we didn't have that, we wouldn't be able to pay for the nearly $1 billion shortfall of his expansion in the Medicaid program. So Governor Holcomb is not a strong conservative leader, and the Indiana State Legislature, the General Assembly, has only enabled his profligate spending, which has been exacerbated since the pandemic, and in particular, some of the disastrous decisions that were laid out during the pandemic really impacted small businesses like my own to the tune of more than $30,000 in losses, thanks to the governor's implementation of the eviction moratorium that was later extended by the president, completely unconstitutional. And of course, the mask mandates and the shutdowns, in which the government played favorites and got to pick which businesses were allowed to function and which businesses had to close, doing enormous damage to small business owners across the state. And now he's buddying up with these cushy multi-billion dollar international corporations. And that's all well and good. Economic expansion, is twofold. On the one hand, you have to, big business is great. But on the other hand, you have to invest in small business expansion in the state as well, for Hoosiers who are lifelong residents of the state and who intend to keep their business and expand here, providing jobs for locals. Whereas these multinational corporations, they come and they go, and you can't stake your entire state on their success. But Garrick Holcomb, of course, buddying up to some of these multi-billion dollar corporations and giving them individual recognition during the state of the state, showing you how in bed the government is with big business.
All three of these total over $9 billion in new investment. Thank you, Mr. Yoon-jae Kim, Star Plus Energy's newly appointed CEO. We could not be more humbled and appreciative of the faith and trust you put in our state, and we will reinvest in you and your workforce. Thank you so much.
There it is. It's beautiful. Take your hat off, boy. That's a dollar bill.
Meanwhile, they're giving taxpayer subsidies to these multi-billion dollar corporations that don't need them for the temporary influx of economic revenue that may go in the future. It's not permanent compared to investing in your small business infrastructure and people who are tied to their communities. There needs to be a dual focus in economic expansion that Eric Holcomb has sadly lacked during his tenure. And he promises that he's not done yet. In fact, he's going to redouble his efforts during his final year as governor. And that spells doom potentially for you and me.
Term limited, though I am. Here are my promises to you for 2024. My administration will not be a ship in port. Instead, we will deploy on multiple fronts until my last day and hour as your governor.
No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
Leaving behind an abysmal record of failure, let's hope that his replacement does better. It's probably going to be Mike Braun. We'll see, but I got a feeling. So let's hope that things are better in the years to come. Thanks for listening to 93 WIBC Saturday Night on the Circle. Before I end this segment, I also wanted to cover the forthcoming retirement surprise announcement at the beginning of the month from Representative Larry Bouchon, announcing on Monday that he is going to step aside for the 2024 election cycle, releasing in a statement, "Scripture teaches us for everything there is a season. And it became clear to me over the Christmas holiday, with much discernment and prayer, that the time has come to bring my season in public service to a conclusion. Therefore, I will not seek re-election to the 8th term and conclude my service in the House of Representatives at the end of the 118th Congress." I don't know why I made him a Southern debutante, but, I just think that I did. But curiously, of course, this also qualifies him for the very cushy pension plan that is given to representatives, which, by the way, why are we paying for these people to retire from government? I thought being in government was meant to be a service to your country, and these people are already entering into the service independently wealthy, many times 100,000-aires that exit 100-millionaires thanks to the benefits of insider trading. And then on top of it, they get a lifetime taxpayer-subsidized pension plan that's quite cushy. I'd also be looking on K Street to see whether Larry Bouchon and Representative Greg Pence, who also announced his retirement this week on Tuesday, are potentially working at the same firm. Of course, both of them leaving behind a record of big government spending because Indiana Republicans do not live up to the core values of conservatism, limited government, low spending, limited taxation. No, in many cases, it's exactly the opposite of what's going on here in the state of Indiana. But at least we don't have an abortion factory on every corner. Isn't that what they run their election premise on every time? Or that's what they did. Anyway, we'll see who steps up to fill the vacuum. And likely, thanks to the limited time, I believe they just have roughly a month before the congressional filing deadline. That leaves the gap wide open for the establishment to fill it with a candidate of their choosing that already has a leg up. You know how the game goes. Thanks for listening to Saturday Night on the Circle, the inaugural broadcast of 2024. We're off to a good start, and we got more to come up next.
Time goes slowly, but carries on. And now the best years have come and gone. You took me by surprise.
This is Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIPC.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to 93 WIBC. This is Saturday Night on the Circle, and I'm your bohemian codger, Ethan Hatcher. Producer Jack on the board, beep, 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 pushing the buttons and doing the things to make the show function. We're starting this segment talking about House Republicans who have now advanced through committee, the Judiciary and Oversight Committees, their first steps for holding Hunter Biden accountable, pressing contempt charges forward. Now, it moves to a House floor vote to the whole chamber, but it's not clear when that vote will be held. If it goes through, it will ultimately be up to the Department of Justice and specifically the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia to decide whether to prosecute. And it will be very insightful to see the partisanship of the Justice Department, whether or not they go forward with the completely what should be completely legitimate charges of contempt against the son of the sitting president. And that offends the Biden family, the Biden crime family, any level of accountability. This was Jill Biden sitting down for an interview with Mika Brzezinski of MSNBC and saying that we've never seen this level of outrage in the country before, and terms like calling the president mentally deficient or the family corrupt, Biden crime family in particular, would have been unthinkable 10 years ago. Oh, how quickly we forget.
What do you think when you hear Trump Republicans calling it the Biden crime family? Our one congresswoman, the Biden crime family sold out America, Marjorie Taylor Greene. He's a liar. He's mentally incompetent. And let's not even talk about what Let's Go Brandon means, mm-hmm. but you have U.S. senators holding signs that say that.
Biden it's hard to realize our country, isn't it? I mean, to look at it, what we used to have and what the other side, the extremists, have turned this country into. I mean, we would never see things like that. Say 10 years ago.
It'd be funny if it weren't so pathetic. No, what the heck, I'll laugh anyway.
How quickly they forget the past, the not so distant past included. Remember when they routinely called George Bush a war criminal for engagement in Iraq? What about the nightly lampooning on talk shows and through comedians that President Trump underwent on a daily basis during his presidency, up to and including baseless impeachments from the Democrat-controlled Congress? So, no, I don't think we've never seen this level of vitriol before, and I think you're very specifically outraged at the accountability that is potentially being brought against the Biden crime family. Now, Hunter Biden, again, flagrantly defying Congress, actually showing up on, I think, what was it, Wednesday? Wednesday morning, sitting on the front row of his contempt hearings in the congressional committees, and he refused to answer questions and ultimately stormed out of the room like a petulant child, again, giving the silent treatment to reporters who were pointing out legitimate things that the Congress is now looking into, like the fact Biden was holding conference calls between business partners and dad, or at least that's what one would assume since he was putting them on speakerphone.
Mr. Biden, did you show up to test?
Why did you show up today? Why did you put your dad on speakerphone if he had nothing to do with your business? You put him on speakerphone multiple times to talk to your business partners. Why did you do that?
The world may never know.
He was a little less talkative than he was in December when he showed up on the Senate side, again, flouting his congressional subpoena. And it didn't used to be a controversial position for individuals that to have to abide by their congressional subpoena. In fact, Jamie Raskin, again, in the not-so-distant past, how quickly Democrats forget, saying that you should tell your children if you do have a congressional subpoena, then you have to attend. And it was expectation that was lived up to by members of the Trump family when they had congressional subpoenas and ultimately were deposed in front of the Congress. And now it's Hunter's turn. But you see, the equal treatment Jill Biden feels is very unfair, very cruel.
Mika, I think what they are doing to Hunter is cruel.
Oh, boo-hoo! Let me play a sad song for you on the world's smallest violin.
This is serious.
I know. This really is the world's smallest violin. See?
So we have more and more evidence coming to light, especially since the impeachment inquiry has begun officially by the House. We have emails between father and business associates directly around the time that Hunter Biden was being appointed to the board in Burisma. We have bank transactions between foreign governments and Biden family members. We have Biden himself discussing holding taxpayer funds hostage while he was acting in official capacity as the vice president in order to force the ousting of the prosecutor that was investigating Burisma while his corrupt son was sitting on the board, and so much more. All of this has been coming to light since the impeachment inquiry has begun. It's a story that has continued to develop since the Biden laptop was first uncovered. And remember, at the time, they said that that was a Russian disinformation campaign. But no, it's been legitimized more and more every step of the way. And, you know, unfortunately for the Biden crime family, we have many Democrats going on the record saying that if you have a congressional subpoena, you are compelled to be deposed before the Congress. That is the authority of the legislature and our elected representatives. This didn't used to be a controversial position. Again, Jamie Raskin, just in 2022?
The lesson is, please tell your children out there in America, if you get a subpoena to go before Congress or you get a subpoena to go to court, go.
He said it. There it is.
Rules for thee, but not for me. Of course, when Trump family members expected to appear before Congress, they did. Biden family members get some kind of exemption. This is ridiculous, and this is why people point to the partisanship of the Justice Department and point to the clown show that is Congress, because it really shouldn't be that complicated at this point to move forward with contempt of Congress charges. And the only reason why this is being stalled and given so much consideration is because Hunter is the son of the sitting president. And if that were you or I, it would be straight to jail. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. That's how it would be. Thanks for listening to Saturday Night on The Circle. We've got more content to come. Up next, Hat Tricks with Hatcher. Truly ridiculous clips you don't want to miss. Stay tuned to 93 WIBC.
Listening to Saturday Night on The Circle on 93 WIPC.
Welcome back to your weekly dose of flagrant contempt by your elected officials and members in media. Tonight, you'll hear reporters cackle and chortle gleefully as they fantasize about presidential assassination in a shocking clip that must be heard to be believed. Bob Menendez, meanwhile, claims he's being unfairly persecuted by the Justice Department as they investigate his ties to foreign governments. And finally, amidst the chaos, Bill O'Reilly has had enough, and he's decided to shutter himself from society at large. You'll hear it all for this week's edition of Hat Tricks with Hatcher.
It's time for another one of Hatcher's Hat Tricks.
The story you are about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
You're listening to Saturday Night on the Circle. I'm your host, Ethan Hatcher, and producer Jack on the board. Beep, 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 pushing the buttons and doing the things to make the show function. We begin with liberal reporters chortling with glee, imagining the imminent assassination of President Donald Trump as they were standing outside a New York courtroom in while Trump was offering oral arguments before the court.
You know, the worst part is, even if he has his window open and he's hanging out of it, he'll be on the other side of the
I mean, if he's driving, we've got a good shot.
Yeah, if he's driving with the front window open.
Yeah, or if it's a convertible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking about that.
Yeah. Like, if he just pulls up like
JFK.
Have you lost your reptilian ass mind?
So, mind you, these are supposedly objective members in media, which we know is a joke, and they don't turn off their bias when the interview starts and they begin asking President Trump questions, or when they're starting to write up the article that they later intend to publish. No, they carry that hatred, that animus with them, and it produces bias in media that we absolutely pick up, and they pretend it's not there. But when you hear shocking clips like that, where reporters are joking about the assassination of the president, then it shows the bias that they have in their hearts. And these liberals seemingly have Trump prominently on the mind. They just can't get him off, including Washington Representative Pramila Jayapal, who made an interesting drop during the contempt of Congress hearings for Hunter Biden, of course, trying to deflect the conversation and bring Donald Trump in, but she made a faux pas.
We're going to talk about outrageous things that have happened or things that have never happened. Let's talk about the fact that President Trump incited an erection. And maybe that too.
Yeah, you could talk about that too, I guess.
I don't want to be imagining any member of the government that way, especially Donald Trump. That's the last thing I'd have on my mind. But, you know, maybe that's just what these deranged liberals are thinking about all the time. Anyway. Whether it's assassination or incitement of an erection, seemingly Donald Trump always top of mind for those that hate him. Thanks for listening to 93 WIBC. We, of course, also had Senator Bob Menendez making a monologue from the floor of the Senate, trying to make it all about him and claiming persecution by the Justice Department, even though we have now association between him and foreign governments offering him payment in exchange for information about the goings-on of the government and influencing what legislation moves forward. And he says that, of course, he's being targeted by the DOJ, and if they allow that to continue, why? And it could be any one of them up next.
By filing three indictments, one in late September, a second one a few weeks later in mid-October, and a third one just last week in early January, it allows the government to keep the sensational story in the press, it poisons the jury pool, and it seeks to convict me in the court of public opinion. In so doing, the government's tactics harm not just me, but each of you, my colleagues, the political establishment, and most importantly, the electorate of New Jersey. The sensationalized allegations are now creating a rising call for my resignation. despite my innocence, and before a single piece of evidence has even been introduced in a court of law. The United States Attorney's Office is engaged not in a prosecution, but a persecution. They seek a victory, not justice.
Oh, boo-hoo! Let me play a sad song for you on the world's smallest violin.
This is serious.
I know. This really is the world's smallest violin. See?
To the extent investigating Bob Menendez does endanger other representatives in the Senate, I hope it does, because you need to investigate these corrupt POSs. You know what I mean? Absolutely look into their financial transactions with the levels of insider trading that are definitely going on within the Congress, within the Senate. Jordan Belfort, we've got a clip from him. He sat down with Tucker Carlson. And if anyone knows a thing or two about ripping off the stock market, it would be Jordan Belfort from Wolf of Wall Street saying that, yes, absolutely, people like Joe Biden, people like Nancy Pelosi, people like Bob Menendez there are engaged in money laundering, in stock manipulation, in insider trading, activities that would, again, be criminal for you or me, land us straight to jail, do not pass go, do not collect $200, but because they are the elite, the establishment types, they get a pass. Speaking of establishment types, Joe Biden, of course, he is losing popularity. His approval ratings are at an all-time low, competing amongst the lowest in history. And representatives for the administration are going out gaslighting, attempting to deflect, including campaign spokesman Quentin Folks, who made a truly outrageous claim that I think may be a little insulting to Joe Biden's former running mate. We'll see if you agree.
Explain to them more or less the accomplishments that Biden's had in office. Is he wrong to be worried?
Look, first of all, I want to very level set this. Like, nobody, no administration has accomplished what the Biden-Harris administration has accomplished for the African-American community.
Really?
We made this one up. It's a made-up tale. It's a total fabrication. It never happened. It never happened. This one was invented by a writer.
I wonder if the first African-American president of the United States would have something to say about who benefited the African-American community more. How quickly he forgets his former running mate, Barack Obama. Of course, we know there's no love between the former president and the vice president. Barack Obama is one of his most famous statements about Joe Biden. Never underestimate Joe Biden's ability to F things up, except he didn't say, you know, he didn't say fudge. You know what I mean? So Joe Biden attempting to take credit in a ridiculous way, saying that no president has accomplished more for African-Americans, but singing a very different tune back in 1987, attempting to distance himself with the activists in the civil rights movement, as he then put it.
During the 60s, I was, in fact, very concerned about the civil rights movement. I was not an activist. I worked at an all-black swimming pool in the east side of Wilmington, Delaware. I was involved. I was involved in what they were thinking, what they were feeling. I was involved, but I was not out marching. I was not down in Selma. I was not anywhere else.
Oh, damn!
I wasn't anywhere near that business, you know, attempting to distance himself, but now saying no president has done more for the African-American community. Joe Biden is flagrantly dishonest. He's been corrupt his entire life, and the only consistent position he's had is one of being inconsistent. Thanks for listening to Saturday Night on the Circle. I'm your host, Ethan Hatcher. We, of course, have one more soundbite to go in this segment, and that's Bill O'Reilly losing his temper, unloading in a monologue, and saying that he intends to distance himself from society at large. He's cut his friend base and excluded all progressives. Now, I know we live in very politically contentious times, but I think this is a rather myopic way to approach the world and silo yourself in an echo chamber where the only people who surround you are those who agree. Here's what Bill O'Reilly had to say.
I'm telling you, I don't have any progressive friends anymore. They're gone because I can't stomach them. Criminals running wild, murdering people. Because progressive DAs funded by George Soros don't want to punish the violent criminals? That's what you're giving me? You support that? Get out of my house. Out. I've had it. Biden is not going to get any better. and the Democratic Party has to get destroyed next November. I don't care whether you like Trump or not. Trump governed this nation in a responsible way where everybody prospered.
Like Zoinks, man. This is really spooky.
Yeah, this doesn't feel safe.
Let's get out of here.
I think it's very healthy to be able to defend your political position in a debate against those who disagree and be able to walk away and know that you don't share the same worldview, but then still hold a mutual respect. That's how public discourse used to go. And not all of my friends agree politically. Some are conservative, some are moderate, some are establishment, some are liberal, some are, you know, moderate Democrats. And many, in fact, I would say by far the most, aren't engaged politically at all. In fact, most people, I think, aren't caught up in this political maelstrom. We kind of lose sight. We put on the political blinders because we pay attention to these discussions. We pay attention to the news. But if you're going to be able to maintain your political philosophy, one of the best ways to do it is to be able to articulate those positions and then bounce them off of people who have different worldviews. And you know, sometimes you grow, sometimes you evolve, and you don't necessarily change what you believe, but it gives you new insights and new perspectives that show you a different way to approach the topic. Anyway, thanks for listening to Saturday Night on the Circle. And, you know, Bill O'Reilly, that's fine. He can silo himself off from the world, but I enjoy seeing different perspectives. Because it helps educate and inform my own perspective on the world and politics. You can find my podcast uploaded to WIBC.com as well as Saturday Night on the Circle.fireside.fm. Stay tuned because up next we're going to talk about that crazy Alaska Airlines trip and what the National Traffic Safety Board found that had dropped 16,000 feet and survived. You won't believe it. We'll tell you about it up next.
You're listening to Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIBC.
Welcome back to Saturday Night on the Circle, where I'm sure the passengers of that MAX 737 Boeing are glad to be staying alive. It's a nightmare situation to imagine what happened last Friday when they were 16,000 feet up in the air and all of a sudden the emergency door gets sucked off. One guy loses his shirt. You got luggage flying out the window, people's papers, laptops, cell phones, an infant was sitting on somebody's lap and they had to hold on to baby for dear life to keep the kid from getting sucked out into the wild blue yonder. Fortunately, nobody suffered a fatality. You know, you had the oxygen mask dropping down from the ceiling, which is something you never want to see when you're riding an airplane. Like, I've looked at it in the brochure before, but I would not want to live through a scenario where they actually had to be deployed in a situation like this. Again, everybody landed safely and the NTSB grounded all 737 MAX 9 flights because others have experienced some technical issues, not of this magnitude, but enough to cause concern. Interestingly, a side note, Boeing had announced their intent to diversify their workforce a few years ago, and then now airplanes are falling apart. I wonder if there's any connection there. That's just speculative. You know, the mind wonders. Now all those 737 MAX 9 flights have been grounded. That particular plane had given some indication of trouble before, which is why they weren't flying it over the ocean, thank goodness. But they knew that there was pressure issues in the cabin, and then, well, now we know why. I guess they had a few screws loose or something going wrong in the fuselage for a part of the plane to just be ripped off mid-flight. And then you won't believe what survived the 16,000-foot fall. couple of cell phones, not one, but two, in what I would say is a pretty stunning advertisement for the efficacy of your OtterBox case. They fell 60,000 feet without so much as a scratch. They were still functional, and you could track down who owned the cell phones. And this is according, this isn't just, you know, made up. It was confirmed by the NTSB. A Twitter user had found the cell phone with the charging cord still attached. So those USB-C charging cords, really, really sturdy for it to still be in the phone. Of course, it was ripped in half, the cable was, but still attached. That's very impressive. And the phone still functional, still had a charge. So invest in OtterBox if you want to protect your cell phone. Here in Indianapolis, we also had an interesting story. The entitlement of people is absolutely wild. A couple chose to engage in what's called, and I've never heard of this before, a pop-up wedding. Okay, now I've heard of pop-up shops where they have, you know, a temporary store move into a storefront, you know, for a limited time, couple weeks, couple months. It depends on the venue. But this is a pop-up wedding, and, you know, a bunch of jerks stormed into the Mansion Society without so much as a how do you do, and began their wedding ceremony. And mind you, they didn't pay the booking fee to the owners. They left a bunch of trash. They didn't buy any coffee. They just availed themselves of this private business and went on their merry way. You know, a few of them may have gotten a coffee, but not most of the group. And then after the fact, of course, the bride offers $200 of a $500 booking fee. But, you know, obviously that's not satisfactory. And the business owners themselves, a young, I believe a Hispanic couple, it was a mother-daughter team. Yeah. Anna Lizama and Zoraida Lizama, mother and daughter, they've owned this business for the last 2 years, and they felt like backed into a corner because they just started the ceremony right away. They were filming it, and you know how these situations go. If they were, you know, going to break up the wedding, then they would become the instant target of outrage online and potentially lose the reputation of their business that they've worked so hard to establish over the last 2 years. And additionally, Mansion Society is in the lobby of a residential structure. So, like, probably the worst place that you should be conducting a ceremony like this. Anyway, thanks for listening to Saturday Night on the Circle. Stay tuned for more. Up next, we're going to be talking about the Defense Department scandal, where Lloyd Austin has been, and apparently government's still left out of the loop. You won't believe it. We'll tell you about it up next.
It's jungle out there. Disorder and confusion everywhere. No one seems to care. Well, I do.
You're listening to Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIPC.
Welcome back to 93 WIBC, Saturday Night on the Circle. I'm your Bohemian codger, Ethan Hatcher. And producer Jack, do my eyes deceive me? I think we have the camera back up in action. Yes, it's working.
Yes, we do. I don't know how it got fixed, but it got fixed.
Sometimes that's how technology around here works. Maybe we jiggled the cable. I don't know. I didn't even touch the thing. It was working for Guy's show. You know, and I don't know.
But
that's the important thing. It's working now, you know, and for the listeners who may have doubted that I was in the studio this entire time, you now have the proof. I'm here. It wasn't just a pre-recorded first hour. No, I was here the entire time and will remain so until I go off at 9 p.m. Thanks for joining me. In this segment, we're going to talk about the unfolding scandal in the Defense Department. Lloyd Austin disappearing for a period of time, not telling anybody where he went, and now Inspector General launching an investigation.
This is getting more serious now for the president's administration. The Defense Department Inspector General is now investigating how Secretary Lloyd Austin's vanishing act and undisclosed hospitalization were handled. Secretary Austin is still out of commission, and the White House is working double time to try to explain away this controversy.
This all began more than like almost a month and a half ago now, when at first Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin went in for a medical procedure to treat his prostate cancer, which that's fine. Nobody is upset that the Defense Department or Defense Secretary had to undergo a medical treatment. It's the lack of transparency. It's the fact that he didn't inform even his deputy secretary, who had to temporarily take over his duties when he was hospitalized again due to complications, and keeping the White House out of the loop, which has now damaged their already impaired credibility even further.
Why should we believe anything that this administration tells us about anything ever again?
Kirby!
Not there in dreamland.
Kirby!
Not there in dreamland.
I think we all recognize, and I think the Pentagon has been very, very honest with themselves about the challenge to credibility by what has transpired here, and how hard it was for them to be fully transparent with the American people. I think we all recognize that. And wait, now just give me a second now. I know you got another one coming here, but we all recognize that this didn't unfold the way it should have on so many levels, not just the notification process up the chain of command, but the transparency issue. We all recognize that. And I think we all want to make sure we learn from that. It's up to you and your colleagues, and it's up to the American people to determine, you know, how much they're going to ascribe what happened here to our credibility on every single issue. But in every way, Secretary Austin has been an exceptional defense secretary, and he still has the full faith and confidence of the commander in chief.
Still has the full faith and confidence. They still... Okay, look. He hasn't taken responsibility. He continues not to be transparent. And at this point, after all this scrutiny and after the media attention of the media has been alerted, it begs the question of what the defense secretary has left to hide, because he hasn't taken responsibility. He continues not to be transparent. The White House still left out of the loop. They don't know where the defense secretary is conducting business of the United States. They don't know when he's coming home from the hospital, where he's doing his business. Again, is it bedside? This is kind of important to know, especially at a time of war when our allies are under attack by terrorist threats and even United States forces are being attacked by Houthi rebels. So, yeah, we need the defense secretary to be up and on top of things and have an awareness of what he's doing in the business of the American people. But still, the White House kept out of the loop.
You said that Secretary Austin took part in the conversations regarding the Red Sea. Do you know if he was conducting his business from the bedside, or is he released from the hospital?
Kirby!
Not there in dreamland!
Kirby!
Not there in dreamland!
I would refer you to the Pentagon for his whereabouts and his condition. It's yesterday, at least for where he is today. Yesterday, he was still in the hospital.
Gibberish. You got nothing. He has no answer to where the defense secretary is after saying that he's taken responsibility and maintains full confidence of the executive. And if they're not going to tell us what's going on with the defense secretary, what aren't they telling us about the executive, about the president of the United States, about his declining mental health condition and declining faculties generally? All of this brought to light by the scandal at a time when I'm sure the administration is not looking to arouse the ire of the American people in a contentious and close election year, during which he's likely to face his former rival, Donald Trump. So it's damaging the credibility of the administration, and it's hilarious. They're trying to put on a bold face. It's, oh, well, you know, we're asking the right questions, and we've been very inquisitive since we found out that the defense secretary had prostate cancer, which was the same time the American people discovered it, more than a month later after the fact.
Going back to Selena's question about Secretary Austin, I think what she was
getting at, it seems, is that there's a big difference when Jake Sullivan was informed by the Pentagon in whether he was told when he asked about Secretary Austin's condition, we don't know because we haven't been told by the secretary, versus we know, but we're not going to share that with you, or we've not been authorized to share that with you. So the question is, which one was it? Did Pentagon officials decline to share information they knew with the National Security Advisor, or did they just not have the information themselves? Yeah.
I would put it this way. Once we found out he was in the hospital, we certainly asked all the questions you would think we would ask to try to ascertain his condition and what drove him into the hospital. Of course we were curious about that. He's the Secretary of Defense and he's a key member of the administration. I would just tell you that effort to try to get more information was overt, and it was genuine, and it was certainly in the spirit of making sure that we understood what was going on with him and in terms of his recovery. I'll let the Pentagon speak to the information flow, both publicly and inside the chain of command, but I can assure you that throughout every step of the way, from the time we were notified until yesterday when we all found out that he had prostate cancer, there was no lack of curiosity on our part, no lack of or slackening of an effort to try to find out what was wrong with him.
All right, move on. Nothing to see here. Please disperse. Nothing to see here. Please.
Forgive our skepticism there, spokesman Kirby, about the levels of transparency and inquisitiveness of the administration. Well, now we're going to find out exactly what went on, thanks to the Inspector General launching an investigation against the Defense Department Secretary, and exactly what the breakdown was, where the lack of communication happened, what policies can be implemented to ensure it never happens again. And of course, the American people are ultimately going to have to decide whether or not they want to hold the executive accountable for the complete chaos that the administration has descended into thanks to his lackluster leadership. You're listening to Saturday Night on the Circle, 93 WIBC. You can find my podcast uploaded to saturdaynightonthecircle.fireside.fm as well as wibc.com. Stay tuned. Up next, we'll tell you about a ridiculous pro-Hamas protest that was held just right outside my window here on the steps of Monument Circle earlier this week. A pro-Hamas group protesting, and we'll play some sound bites from that and an interview from John Herrick up next, so stay tuned.
Never bother you, never bother me. I feel happy and fine. Ha ha! Living in the sunlight, loving in the moonlight, having a wonderful time.
This is Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIBC.
Living in the sunlight, loving in the moonlight.
Welcome back to Saturday Night on the Circle. I'm your host, Ethan Hatcher, with producer Jack on the board. Beep, 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 pushing the buttons and doing the things to make the show function. This week we had a bit of an oxymoron. Pro-Palestinian Jews meeting on Monument Circle in what essentially amounts to chickens for KFC. Let's not be dishonest here, intellectually dishonest. It's not a pro-Palestinian protest. This was a pro-Hamas protest. People who were portraying Israel as progenitors of genocide, which is an absolutely ridiculous position, considering that it was Hamas which murdered civilians, breaking a ceasefire, and now is facing retaliation, natural consequence for their aggression. And yes, it's very sad what's happening to the Palestinian people that is the result of the aggression from their representatives in government, which cares not a damn about them, ripping out water pipes, taking away resources from their own people. And meanwhile, you got nitwits like Malka Bird out here storming on Monday morning on Monument Circle, demanding a cease to tax dollars that are used for genocide in Gaza, which is not what's going on.
We're here today because we're over 90 days of a constant siege and bombardment in Gaza. Over 22,000 people have been killed. Over 10,000 of those are children. So we're just here to make a very clear message for Senator Young and Senator Braun to let them know that our tax dollars cannot be used to fund a genocide in Gaza.
Your intellect is as weak as your dollar. Failure is your destiny. You disrespect yourself and your nation. You are made of stupid.
The Jewish Voice for Peace, a pro-Hamas group, was associated and appeared with the Middle Eastern Students Association of IUPUI, and I don't hesitate in saying that these IUPUI students who attended the show should be expelled, or attended this protest should be expelled immediately. It wouldn't be complicated if they were part of a Klan rally or performing Nazi salutes, because the university wouldn't want to be associated with hate speech at that level, which absolutely, if you are claiming repeating the cry of from the river to the sea, that is a call for genocide. So they are gaslighting you. They are engaged in a very inflammatory rhetoric that is calling for the extermination of the Jewish people, meanwhile pointing the finger at Israel and, you know, saying that they're guilty of the war crimes.
Not another nickel, not another dime. We say no to Israel's crimes.
Oh, wait, you serious? Let me laugh even harder.
Meanwhile, South Africa has actually taken Israel to court at the International Court of Justice, the highest court from the United Nations, over charges of genocide, and which is hilarious because South Africa sure has come a long way since the days of putting gasoline in rubber tires and placing them around the necks of their enemies and setting it alight. What the heck is this? And it shows how impotent the United Nations governing body is as a whole to be allowing this charade to transpire. And John Fetterman, Betterman now, I don't know what medicine he's taken to help him undergo such a radical personality shift, but I'm here for it because he was appearing at a college or a university and speaking to college students and rebuffing at the idea of Israel being labeled or accused of committing genocide and suggesting that South Africa, they need to sit this one out.
And now let's also talk about that. Now we're talking about genocide. And now South Africa now is now bringing that kind of a trial. Maybe South Africa being able to sit this one out when they're talking about criticizing.
Boom. Roasted.
He's been drawing a lot of ire from the left wing when he's just been speaking truth, whether it's about Israel or about the idea of enforcing border security, not being anti-immigrant or xenophobic. I mean, he's really been on quite a roll lately, and I'm fascinated by the continuing evolution of John Fetterman. But yes, it's ridiculous for South Africa to be making charges of genocide, and you see who the aggressors are in displays like thug tactics of Hamas being emulated in the United States by these protesters who are blocking traffic, grinding commerce to a halt, endangering citizens by stopping emergency vehicles from being able to navigate the city. This is like terrorism light, and it's absolutely ridiculous that it's allowed to continue, blocking traffic in New York City for hours, crossing like the Brooklyn Bridge or the Holland Tunnel, and grinding traffic to a standstill.
End the siege on Gaza now!
End the siege on Gaza now!
Well, this thing is worthless. Like my Palestinian alarm clock.
Allahu Akbar!
And that's not hyperbole, because yes, these pro-Hamas protesters, not pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas protesters are chanting Allahu Akbar in their protests. So it shows you the aggression, the religious antipathy, and the hatred for the Jewish people.
Thank you.
they quite manifestly do not want a peaceful end to the conflict because they believe they're involved in a religious holy war and their enemies are the people of Israel. They've avowed to wipe them out and exterminate the Jewish people from the river to the sea. And this kind of aggression should not be tolerated. And absolutely, Israel should be supported in their efforts to push back against Hamas and finally end the attacks. Thanks for listening to 93 WIBC. I also wanted to play a soundbite from the interview with Tucker Carlson and Jordan Belfort. You may remember that name from the Leonardo DiCaprio movie Wolf of Wall Street, where he played Jordan Belfort as the hedonistic stockbroker scam artist. So if anybody knows about stock market manipulation and money laundering, it would be a former con man like Jordan Belfort, who when he observes the financial transactions of the Biden crime family and Democrats in Congress like Nancy Pelosi, sees all the hallmarks of money laundering and insider trading, which if you or I had been involved with, straight to jail, do not pass go, do not collect $200, but different rules if you're a leftist.
It appears that members of Congress consistently beat the S&P 500 in their personal investments.
Nancy Pelosi.
And a lot of others.
Right.
And Pelosi especially.
She's the famous one. Yeah.
Yeah. So how does that, is Nancy Pelosi, do you think, a stock-picking genius?
No, she has to be operating on information that's non-public. Well, there's not,
wouldn't that say, make her a criminal?
Yeah, but, you know, look at Joe Biden right now. I mean, look what's going on right now. Like, yeah.
Do you think he's a good stock picker?
Joe Biden? No, I think he's great at laundering money, though.
Yeah,
I mean, honestly,
apparently.
From what I've seen right now, I don't get it. Like, just imagine if it was Trump who was president.
Yeah.
But every single day in the front page of the New York Times, the Washington Post, and every other publication would be like, $40,000 check for $20,000 check from his brother. Like, it'd be game over. Cries for impeachment.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be like the world falling down. He's in China's pocket. But it's like we're living in an alternative universe right now where people in power, especially on the left, right, can operate almost with impunity. And Pelosi's a perfect example. She's not the only one, but it's inconceivable that someone could have that high return in the market where everyone else can't do it.
This is why people are outraged with the executive, because of the flagrant levels of dishonesty and the in-your-face nature of their financial crimes and their association with foreign governments, and Joe Biden using his power and influence to financially benefit his son and other members of the family. So, you know, if anybody can lend credibility to that argument, it would be a former con man who knows the ins and outs of that kind of crime. Thanks for listening to Saturday Night on the Circle. Up next, I wanted to play an interesting argument that was put forward by Trump's lawyer during the appeal hearing regarding presidential immunity, making a very curious position when asked about what the president can do with SEAL Team 6. You don't want to miss this. Up next on Saturday Night on the Circle.
It's getting dark, too dark to see. I feel I'm knocking on heaven's door.
Not, not, you're listening to Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIPC.
Welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. This is Saturday Night on the Circle. I'm your bespectacled curmudgeon, Ethan Hatcher. In this segment, I wanted to cover an fascinating argument that was offered by Trump lawyer John Sauer in the appeal hearing, oral arguments for the presidential immunity case. This was at a federal court. And look, I think at this point, it's quite obvious, barring some enormous twist of quirk of fate, Donald Trump is probably going to be the nominee for the Republican Party, better for better or for worse. You know, of course, he's enormously popular with the base, but sometimes these drops that are made by Trump associates bear pause for consideration, especially when John Sauer is asserting that the president could assassinate his political rivals using SEAL Team 6, and that would qualify under immunity as long as he wasn't successfully impeached.
Could a president order SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a political rival? That's an official act in order to SEAL Team 6?
He would have to be and would speedily be, you know, impeached and convicted before the criminal prosecution.
But if he weren't, there would be no criminal prosecution, no criminal liability for that.
Chief Justice's opinion in Marbury against Madison and our Constitutional Commission and the plain language of the impeachment judgment clause all clearly presuppose that what the founders were concerned about was not.
I asked you a yes or no question. Could a president who ordered SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a political rival who was not impeached, would he be subject to criminal prosecution?
If he were impeached and convicted first. And so
your answer is.
My answer is qualified yes. There is a political process that would have to occur under the structure of our Constitution.
Now, do I think that President Trump would undertake a political assassination against his rivals? No, I do not. But I am especially concerned when his lawyer is so willing to participate in hypothetical questions like that just to obtain this, blanket immunity for his client. I would have been much more comfortable if instead of participating in that really gross hypothetical, he would have merely honestly stated that's not how the military works and the president wouldn't be able to assassinate his rivals on the political stage. Like that is a really gross hypothetical to engage in, but he took the bait. He took the bait hook, line, and sinker in that desperate attempt to qualify his client, President Trump, for blanket immunity, which in this case, I don't think they should give, because yes, it would get President Trump a get out of jail free card, as it were, but it would also qualify crimes like President Biden, the crimes of the Biden crime family would also qualify under presidential immunity for actions that he has taken to enrich his family in office or other potential infractions like President Barack Obama utilizing the IRS to deny conservative groups 501c3 status to be able to register as a PAC and operate as a political arm for the GOP. So yeah, like it's very dicey to give blanket immunity for any action that the president could undertake. Like, I don't think that was what was intended by the Constitution. Another interesting drop from the Trump camp. You may remember in Iowa earlier this month, there was tragically another school shooting. But this one didn't seem to gather much media attention and quickly fell out of the news cycle. And I'll tell you why, producer Jack, because it didn't follow something that I've come up with called the rule of 10. If there are fewer than 10 fatalities in a school shooting, this is just another day in America. It's, you know, just a quick drop on the news cycle and then it moves out. If it's 10 or more, that's when as a nation we pause and pay attention and it turns into another like Colorado school shooting or a Parkland or a Uvalde or a Virginia Tech, something that people remember and they take seriously. I call that the rule of 10. Turn
gotcha.
Your microphone.
So if it's less than 10, then we don't care. Apparently.
Right. It falls out. And that was the case here. Only four students injured, only one administrator injured, and the only fatality was the sixth grader and the perpetrator, the 17-year-old himself at the Perry High School. So all in all, you know, just another day.
Just another day.
and we can see that kind of attitude reflected in a callous statement by Donald Trump at an Iowa rally where I can't believe he said this. Just telling the parents of that murdered sixth grader, you got to get over it. Got to get over it.
Before going further, I want to send our support and our deepest sympathies to the victims and families touched by the terrible school shooting yesterday in Perry, Iowa. To the entire community, we love you, we pray for you, and we ask God to heal and comfort really the whole state and the pain that you have. This is something that's very unique to your state. We're really with you as much as anybody can be. It's a very terrible thing that happened, and it's just horrible to see that happening. It's just horrible. So surprising to see it here. But we have to get over it. We have to move forward.
What's the matter with you?
Sad for my father.
All right, but you gotta get over it.
I can't imagine telling those parents with a straight face to get over the very recent murder of their son. Yes, it's an incredible tragedy that deserves reflection and question why it continues to happen. Because it seems like this is quickly becoming, you know, like I said, just another part of the news cycle, especially if it follows the rule of 10, where it's fewer than 10 fatalities, you know, just another day. Like, we are becoming so callous and so used to this kind of violence, and reflected there by President Trump telling the parents in the community, you know, just get over this school shooting. It's not important. And that should give you cause for concern, like associates of President Trump, Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, who I imagine is trying to jockey for a vice presidential nod in his campaign for 2024, and continuing to maintain that, you know, if the election doesn't go President Trump's way, then she's not going to certify the results. And they set up this argument. If Trump wins, the election was legitimate. If he loses, it was stolen. And that's the basic thesis being advanced by Congresswoman Elise Stefanik.
Would you vote to certify, and will you vote to certify, the results of the 2024 election, no matter what they show?
Well, I voted not to certify the state of Pennsylvania because, as we saw in Pennsylvania and other states across the country, that there was unconstitutional acts circumventing the state legislature and unilaterally changing election law.
What about 2024? What about 2024?
We will see if this is a legal and valid election.
Just to be very clear, I don't hear you committed to certifying the election results. Will you only commit to certify the results if former President Trump wins? Does that mean the former President Trump wins?
No, it means if they are constitutional. What we saw in 2020 was unconstitutional circumventing of the Constitution, not going through state legislatures when it comes to changing election law. And we're seeing this in my home state of New York, Kristen. We are seeing Democrats try to steal the election.
No fair! You change the outcome by measuring it!
Completely overlooking the fact that Trump had his day in court. In fact, he had more than 60 days in court challenging the election at multiple levels and failing every time, whether for procedural reasons or for lack of evidence. In fact, now, like Rudy Giuliani being convicted of defamation against poll workers in Georgia, something that is quite difficult to do unless you're explicitly lying about people. And in this case, he was impugning their collaboration in a scheme to overturn the election and steal the election for Joe Biden, which, you know, look, the Supreme Court has ruled in the election in the past, in recent memory, in favor of Republican George Bush when the election was under scrutiny in Florida. It came under, 300 ballots and hanging chads, and how those were counted, ultimately putting George Bush ahead and securing his presidency. So I have no doubt that if there were election interference, if there were votes truly being stolen, then the Supreme Court itself would have once again intervened, especially since three President Trump nominees were sitting on the bench: Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh. I can't remember that. The woman's name from Notre Dame. Shoot, it's escaping my memory at the moment. But anyway, he has three nominees sitting on the bench who would have intervened in his favor if there was any funny business going on. Thanks for listening to Saturday Night on the Circle. I'm your host, Ethan Hatcher. Wrapping things up in the next segment, wanted to consider a way that Dave Chappelle is once again dropping truth bombs and earning the ire of the left on his most recent comedy special that dropped on Netflix. Don't miss it for the final segment of Saturday Night on the Circle, coming up next.
So I wake in the morning and I step outside and I take a deep breath and I get real high and I scream from the top of my lungs, what's going on?
This is Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIPC.
Welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. Wrapping things up on a Saturday night. Are we okay? Did we survive? Did we make it through a conversation that was ever so slightly mildly critical of former President Trump? Are we okay?
Yeah, we're okay.
We made it. Okay, good. I'm glad. I know sometimes that upsets people, but, you know, I feel like it's worthwhile to just consider some things from a different perspective. And we look, for better or for worse, President Trump is going to be the Republican nominee. So we need to gear up for potential criticism of his campaign. Thanks for listening to my show. You can find podcasts uploaded to SaturdayNightOnTheCircle.fireside.fm as well as WIBC.com. It seems like whenever I talk about former President Trump, it outrages people in the same way that Dave Chappelle outrages leftists when he drops truth bombs about, in this case, the trans community. Most recently on his comedy special that was released at the end of the year. And he opened with an allegorical monologue that is absolutely on point, talking about Jim Carrey and how that relates to people who are engaged in an alternate reality, being the transgender movement.
Now, I'm not going to go all into it, but Jim Carrey is talented in a way that you can't practice or rehearse. What a God-given talent. I was fascinated with him. And Norm knew that. And he called me up and he goes, Dave, I'm doing a movie with Jim Carrey. Do you want to meet him? And I said, yes, I do. And it was the first time I could remember since my father died being excited. And the movie was called Man on the Moon. I didn't know any of this. And in this movie, Jim Carrey was playing another comedian I admired, the late, great Andy Kaufman. Yes, and Jim Carrey was so immersed in that role that from the moment he woke up to the time he went to bed at night, he would live his life as Andy Kaufman. I didn't know that. When they said cut, this was still Andy Kaufman. So much so that everybody on the crew called him Andy. I didn't know any of that. I just went there to meet him. And when he walked into the room where we were supposed to meet, I screamed, Jim Carrey. And everyone said, no. Call him Andy. And I didn't understand. And then he came over and he was acting weird. I didn't know he was acting like Andy Kaufman. Just like, hey, how you doing? And I was like, hello. Andy? Now, in hindsight, how f***ing lucky am I that I got to see one of the greatest artists of my time immersed in one of his most challenging processes ever. I'm very lucky to have seen that. But as it was happening, I was very disappointed. Because I wanted to meet Jim Carrey, and I had to pretend this was Andy Kaufman all afternoon. And he was clearly Jim Carrey. I could look at him and I could see he was Jim Carrey. Anyway, I say all that to say, that's how trans people make me feel. Snoop
Dogg. Yeah. And the best comedians have that ability to draw comparisons from everyday life in a way that makes complex issues understandable in a simple way. And these people are engaging in pretend, which is fine. This is a free country. You can behave however you want, dress however you want. If you want you to name yourself something else, well, heck, we can change your name. But you can't alter reality. And as much as you want to pretend you were another gender, that's just not, it's not how genetics works. And forcing other people to participate in the pretend is where you cross the line, because you can't force others to support and engage in your own self-delusion. Thanks for listening to Saturday Night on the Circle. Wrapping things up for this evening, the inaugural broadcast of 2024, and the first time producer Jack has been running the show independently, and I think you've done a pretty good job figuring things out. They threw you into
a couple hiccups, but I wrote some notes.
They threw you in the lion's den, man, with no preparation whatsoever, and you came out on top. Yeah, you conquered it. You knocked it out of the park, man. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
We got all the technical hicks ironed out. The camera's working, and we are set to do better up next week when I return. I'm very excited. It's going to be an awesome 2024, and I hope you join me every step of the way. Unfortunately, that's all the time I have, so I leave you with my parting words of wisdom. As always, wherever you are, whoever you're with, whatever you're doing, remember that life is a state of mind. And I'll see you next week here on 93 WIBC.